Set?
Yep.
Mindset?
Yeah, sure, whatever. I'm ready to mess up this
origin is what you meant to say instead of intro.
Uh-huh.
You are going to mess up this origin.
Well, it's going to be a rough one.
Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
Welcome to Farce Perspective, a podcast about the last 50 years of comedy. On key anniversaries, we look back and ask, what was innovative material then? What continues to be successful now? And what have people thought about it along the way?
I'm Ben.
I'm Pete.
And welcome back to the Henson Perspective, where today we are talking about the 15th production episode, the 11th broadcast episode, which was broadcast in New York City on November 29th, 1976, with special guest star Candace Bergen. We obviously always tend to talk about the guest star as our second third of programming, but basically, once we get to Kermit in front of the curtains introducing the show, this episode is playing with awareness of the format. In that Piggy calls out Kermit for calling her Miss and calling her beautiful, a thing that I have personally noticed that he is a little uneven on as to his physical descriptions of the female co-hosts, and I've always felt a little squitchy about it.
Piggy, what are you doing out here?
Oh, Kermit, dear, did you know that every time we have a beautiful girl on the show, you forget about me?
So I was glad that Piggy called him out on it. That is a very low-level self-awareness that happens in this episode, which is the last of the initial program.
I was going to ask, was this the first of the second or the last of the first?
Recorded on August 10th and 11th, 1976, this was the last of the first chunk of production recorded episodes before they went back to America from London to have holidays and recruit and plan for the next segment where they recorded the back half of the season. Production episodes 16 through 24 for the remainder of the show.
Traditionally referred to as the back nine.
I didn't know that, but it makes sense.
Actually, this would be the back eight.
Obviously, we've had our first exposure to second half of the season production with last week's episode with Valerie Harper. So this is a bit of a slingshot. That was a little satellite of what the second half might be like. They obviously were playing a lot more in the Valerie Harper episode with the backstage and with self-awareness, but this is the remnant of that.
Yeah, this definitely felt, which is why I was asking was whether this was the first, because it didn't feel like the Valerie Harper episode, but it also didn't feel like the episodes we've seen before. It was, I would have expected, if this were to be the last one, to be have it be tired or them running out of steam. But this was a strong episode, in my opinion.
Interesting. I think this is one of the weakest episodes that we've seen. I found this episode to be wildly inconsistent. And that, to me, is weak. Not just to be bad, but to be all over the map is, to me, a problem.
So the first time I watched this episode, I don't take notes the first time. I just watch it and take it in. I laughed more out loud at this episode than I have in any episode so far. Second time, zero laughs.
So it surprised you on a number of occasions.
Yes.
And there are inventive new things that are happening in this episode, which, to your point, is surprising as the last hurrah of a production set. And much more characteristic of, let's try some new things because we've just gotten back.
Yeah. But from your perspective of not really enjoying this episode as much as others, I can see that because we'll get into it as it goes on.
That's right.
But they reuse a joke this episode.
Uh-huh.
They do call that out.
In a strange way. But yes, let's get down to it then. Let's actually talk about the various segments and try, instead of trying to come up with some on-the-fly summary of the episode before we do it. So let us go through the running order of the episode. We will leave out anything specifically having to do with the guest host until we get to the end. Then we'll double back, do a little quiz on context for Candace Bergen in 1976, talk about her segment specifically, and then wrap up the episode with statistics, and then our five favorite moments of the show.
So the episode opens with the credits, as they always do. I felt Kermit was extra yay-y, is a note I took. He seemed to be real enthusiastic in this opening.
In the O, he does the Kermit arms. So even in his first foray of just saying, he gives an extra little woo and is visibly, demonstrably excited.
Yeah, and then in his singing of introducing the guest star, he also seems more animated than usual.
I agree.
And it really makes me happy to introduce to you Miss Candace Bergen.
Fozzie's joke is excellent. This was definitely my first laugh, and I think it's the first time I've laughed at a Fozzie joke in the opening credits.
Question: what has 1,000 legs but can't walk? 500 pairs of pants.
And then Gonzo has...
he has a mallet, which he then brings below the border of the cake and switches
to a boxing glove, and then punches the O, and it makes the sound of the ringside bell ringing. And then he, like, mugs to camera, like, look what I did.
Yeah, it's a real victory for him. He snookered us all.
Yeah, which is interesting to the next time we see him. He's very sad.
It's true. At which point we get to what I was referring to earlier, is that Kermit comes out in front of the curtain and says that we have the beautiful Miss Candace Bergen, and says that she's not just a pretty face.
And she's not just another pretty face. Besides being an actress, she's a top photographer, a writer, a world traveler, what you'd call a well-rounded person.
But when Statler and Waldorf...
he says she's a well-rounded person, which they then woo at.
Yes, in reference to her curves. And he says, hey, we're not going to have that kind of male chauvinist pig comment here on the show.
And then Piggy storms out because, as we've seen in previous episodes, she takes issue with pigs being used derogatorily.
I'm tired of any kind of pig joke.
She says that Ms. Bergen said that I should stand up for my rights. As we have alluded to with the Valerie Harper episode, starting backstage with things that were going on before everybody came out on stage, that could have been, if this were second half of the season or second season episodes, there's a chance we would have seen Piggy and Bergen talking and her juicing her up with women's liberation talk. Instead, we just take it for granted because she says, I was just talking to Ms. Bergen. But that strikes me as the kind of thing that indicates that this is actually first half.
Mm-hmm. She also, as you mentioned earlier, alludes to the fact that every time a beautiful girl is on the show, Kermit forgets about Piggy.
Yeah. Obviously, that's Piggy's problem in perspective. That's what she's concerned about. I'm concerned with a mild skeeviness in terms of celebrating famous women who come on the show almost more for their appearance than anything else. Kermit says she's more than a pretty face, but that's still what he leads with, is, look, she's beautiful. I like it when Piggy calls out and says, we should be doing better than this. I, in general, feel that way. Mm. I will be interested to see whether or not Kermit saying the beautiful, the wonderful for the female guests exclusively continues after this moment, or if this was a note that they took.
Mm.
But I liked that Miss Piggy, therefore, very specifically says, Ms. Bergen.
Listen, Turkey! Ms. Bergen said I should stand up for my rights. Either I open the show or Ms. Bergen and I walk.
As somebody who was raised and taught in elementary school that the name for a woman who you should take seriously as an adult and a professional, regardless of their marital status, was Ms., and the fact that that seems to be largely no longer part of 21st century culture.
Well, it should bring you much solace to know that The Miz is a multi-time world wrestling entertainment champion since the mid-2000s. He has reigned supreme many times.
He?
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure solace is quite the word that you were looking for, but nice bait and switch.
Thank you.
Kermit then responds by saying, well, then Ms. Piggy is going to do the first song. The way he leaned into it was a little chauvinist, a word I will return to later in the program. But it does mean that we get the first Frank Oz Miss Piggy song to open the show.
What Now, My Love?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about the song first, or shall we get right into the meat?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of context on the song. Did you look up anything about the history of the song?
No, of course not.
Written by a trio of people, Gilbert Bercot, Pierre Lejoyer, and Carl Sigman, I believe. It was re-recorded by Bercot in 1975 with this exact arrangement. But prior to that point, it was covered by so many people that the Wikipedia page breaks it down by alphabet letter in order to say all the different people that have performed this song. There is no X, but there are 25 other categories, and only Y and Q have only one entry.
Well, I think the LA punk band X needs to cover this song now.
Recently, prior to this, notable examples of people who performed this song, Shirley Bassey in 1962, Petula Clark in 1963, Sinatra in 66, and Elvis in 73, all did popular versions of this song. So it was out there in the ether. But that particular bolero style, bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum intro, was very much in effect in Bercot's recent 75 re-release.
What now, my love? Now that you left me.
This segment starts with Piggy awkwardly laying down on a chaise lounge or a fainting couch. And you can see her legs, which is also weird. There's a lot of weird leg stuff in this episode, too.
So, if that's your thing, no kink shaving, there's a lot of interesting leg stuff in this episode.
She then sits up and the legs swivel down. It was some good puppeteering, which is why I mention it. And then, yeah, she just sings a song, and then the three whatnots who are doing the bums just harass and harangue her, and they get louder and louder and louder.
But they also physically transform.
I don't think I noticed that.
Yes, the three whatnots start off as the chorus behind her singing. After the first cut, they come back with dark circles around their eyes and small fangs in their mouths.
Okay.
And then for the final chorus, they have large fangs and red horns.
Okay. I noticed the fangs, but it didn't dawn on me that they were progressive.
It is progressive, yes. Okay. And so that's the comic touch, is that not just does the background vocals start to overwhelm, and that the chorus physically start to crowd out Piggy and make her feel like she's not the focus of the song, but they are also becoming more demonic and aggressive physically in their appearance with every camera cut.
Okay. Then we cut backstage, where Fozzie does the wire joke again.
Wire for Kermit the Frog! Are you Kermit the Frog?
Of course I am.
He then shows a coat hanger and hangs it on his nose, just like he did to...
Just like Florence hung it on his face.
Yeah.
To which Kermit says, cute bit.
Long bit. This time I noticed that.
But to your point as to what we were mentioning in the introduction, Fozzie turns to camera and says, I love a running gag. Your point is that that's a deliberate callback to the fact that they've reused this joke.
Yeah, and also foreshadowing the fact that he's only going to be doing these types of running gags.
I think that's interesting in that he's highlighting this is going to be a running gag. Because if you hadn't known about the Florence Henderson previous use of that joke, it's strange to say I love a running gag after a first bit.
Yeah. And then that's pretty much the end of it. Then Kermit does go out in front of the camera and introduces...
our second weird leg song.
Yeah. Which features our guest host, so we will come back to that later.
Mm-hmm. After which we then go backstage for the second in the running gag, which is that Fozzie says that he has a letter for Kermit the Frog.
And he asks Kermit if he is Kermit, and then Kermit confirms, saying,
you know I am, Fozzie.
Kermit's already not having fun. And Fozzie displays a green letter R and says, letter for you. very happy with himself.
Very pleased with the whole bit.
Kermit is mad, but Scooter walks by.
Well, I just want to highlight what Kermit says here. He says, turns to the camera and says, someday going to get him.
Someday I'm going to get him. I don't know how, but I'm going to get him.
Which is a bit of an extreme reaction.
And then immediately follows that by saying, it's not a bad joke, though.
Right. But it is strange that he went straight to revenge.
Yeah, especially this early. If that came after the last backstage thing, totally understand.
The only way that's excusable is that this is production order 15. If we were to take this has been going on all year, and that this kind of backstage shenanigan is something that Kermit desperately wishes Fozzie could channel into his onstage behavior instead of continually being unable to filter his professional life.
Fozzie being the George Clooney of the Muppets.
Which makes Kermit the Richard Kind. But as you say, then Scooter walks past.
And Kermit tries to get him with the same joke, says letter for Scooter or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And Scooter just brushes him off. He's like, I don't have time for this, and walks away.
At which point, Fozzie rushes back on, so excited that Kermit wasn't able to land the gag. Basically going, funny that you failed to be able to tell my great joke.
Yep. It's not so easy, is it, Kermit?
We therefore cut to At the Dance, which is our second tango installation of At the Dance. The first one was Sandy Duncan, which was the previous production episode.
Oh, Sandy Duncan was Air Order 3.
Correct.
The first At the Dance segment is a Droop telling his dance partner that he was the teacher's pet in school.
She says, what's the matter? They couldn't afford a dog?
And he gets offended by that and proceeds to slap her across the face 12 times.
Oh my god!
With his nose.
Peter, you have said earlier that stomping, which will come up later in this episode, doesn't count as a hit.
No, it does.
It does count as a hit. I misremembered that.
Misremembered this multiple times now.
So you're considering the fact that he face slaps her. Are these counted as in the hit total?
I kept them separate, but I put them next to it. I put it. So what I haven't counted are things that happen off screen.
Got it.
Which stomping does and doesn't. Because the person getting stomped is never on screen, but you clearly see Miss Piggy go and like stomp them.
But because we don't frequently see puppets' legs, we often don't see the stomp.
But you know what happens. And there's usually the sound effect that goes along with it. So with this, I think the camera does eventually go away, but there's a sound cue of his nose hitting her face. And I counted 12 of those.
Wow.
What's the matter? Couldn't she afford a dog?
It was very difficult to count the actual slap, so I went based off of sound effects.
I enjoy your dedication to your craft.
Thank you.
We then have Zoot and Janice, and Janice is putting to Zoot a random hypothetical off-the-cuff question that if he had the ability to have the Queen of England for lunch.
Dinner.
Would he take her out? And he says,
of course I would.
Well, she can't make it, so how about me?
Then we have, I forget who it was.
The two pigs, two anonymous pigs.
That's right. Dancing, and the male says to the female, you dance like Rogers. She says, Ginger Rogers? He says, no, Roy.
The trivia track of the DVD was very excited to point out that Roy Rogers will actually be a guest in the future. I was less excited.
I enjoy his beverage.
And finally, we end up with George and Mildred dancing together. And George asks, would you mind if I pop the question?
She says, no.
At which point, a Muppet wearing the traditional, it's time to light the lights, purple velvet dance costume that all the man Muppets who walk on stage from the wings are wearing, that we frequently see Gonzo wearing and that Kermit wears on occasion to distress you, walks on with a head that is a pink balloon with a question mark on it.
And as soon as he steps on stage, his head gets popped by a very clear pin that George has been holding this entire time.
And so Mildred is left vaguely disappointed that this is what he was going for.
George is very pleased with himself.
Yes, yes. much in the way that Fozzie was. Same Muppeteer, by the way.
And before we move on, even though we mentioned the tango in the Pogo George watch, Pogo George is non-existent because he knows how to tango.
That's right. From there, we cut to the panel discussion, where we have four guests and Kermit the Frog.
But one of those guests is our guest host, so we'll come back to that.
Got it.
Then we go to the UK spot.
With Rolf in front of the Harvest print curtain, performing It's Not Where You Start by Cy Coleman and Dorothy Fields from the musical Seesaw. The musical Seesaw I mention only because we just saw another song from the musical Seesaw. Nobody Does It Like Me with Valerie Harper and the Clodhoppers was from that same show.
Mm-hmm.
So that appears in production episode 20. So 5 episodes from now, they will revisit this material. But we just saw it last week.
It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And I'm gonna finish.
Hey, Ralph, listen, it's my uncle's favorite song. He says he'd like to hear it one more time, but you only have 20 seconds. All right, hit it!
There's been another sketch that did this before. It's basically the improv Half-Life game, where Rolf plays the song, and then Scooter comes in and says he sang it too fast and he has to play it again, but he only has a minute to do it this time. So he plays it a second time, but faster. Once he finishes that time, Scooter comes back out and says, this is my uncle's favorite song, you need to play it again, but this time you only have 20 seconds, and this time he stands there and watches his watch and gives Ralph the countdown of how much longer he has. And when Ralph finishes, he says, he also changes the last line of the song every time. And for the third time, he says, I'm going to finish on time, and Scooter looks at him and says, nearly. So Ben, as someone who keeps track of the length of music...
Yes.
I tracked not only the length of the whole song period, but each version.
I did something similar.
Oh, boo. You know time is my thing.
I apologize. I know that you're the timekeeper. I know that you have a cloak.
TikTok.
And that you're obsessed with the measurement of time.
Tis
an obsession. Tis. Well, I have the numbers in front of me from when I kept track on it. I cannot look at them.
You already know, so we'll just go over it instead of me quizzing you, because you already know.
Well, I believe I know, in that the first segment was just under a minute.
Yes, it was 53 seconds.
And then there's a little bit of piano vamping while Scooter is talking. And then the second iteration is about 30 seconds.
Or 33.
At which point there is, again, about 4 seconds of Scooter saying the thing about his uncle. First reference of the uncle, I appreciated. Because the previously establishing of the uncle as a jerk and a taskmaster, this was the perfect kind of throwing his weight around abuse that created a successful escalation, in my opinion. My uncle just wants you to play this again is the exact... I mean, really? In the last 30 seconds, Scooter went off stage, talked to his uncle, came back in order to deliver a 4-second order in order to hear it one more time for 10 seconds?
21. Because that's why he says nearly. He says...
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, I ended up with 19.95 seconds for the last 20-second iteration.
Okay.
I heard Scooter say zero as his last word. I think he's counting down the 5-4, and so the final thing that he says isn't what you have written down.
He says nearly, according to
the subtitles.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I had it as he took 21 seconds.
Oh, I see.
But I was just using the
time
code on the streaming.
Got it.
So if you actually used a stopwatch, I tend to believe yours more.
Mm.
But even so, 19.9, still not 20.
No, it means he finished right on time. He got it right before he needed to.
But he wanted 20.
And that jerk of an uncle always gets what he wants.
Yeah,
whether it's a robotic co-host or...
He went under time. He did not perform to the contract stated.
Interesting. I heard zero. You heard nearly. I think either one is funny, but I like yours in terms of the feeling that he almost got it right and that that's what Scooter says.
Which is why it's nearly. Drop it in here.
And you can find Rainbow the Crop. Four, it's not where you start, three, it's where you finish.
Two,
and I'm going to finish on time.
Nearly.
Anyway, as you say, in terms of laughter, I'm surprised you didn't laugh the second time you watched this sketch.
This one I did enjoy.
A banger of a sketch.
Yep, agreed.
I'm sad for U.S. audiences that they didn't get to see this in 1976 or for many years thereafter. This was the highlight of the episode.
Agreed. It's probably my favorite U.K. spot that we've seen so far. Granted, most of them I actively don't like. Some of them I like.
Most of them are designed to be cut.
Yeah.
This was something that I'm genuinely disappointed that somebody wouldn't have seen.
Similar to last week, the Sam the Eagle Tit Willow song.
Right.
That's a bummer that audience didn't get, but they got it on
the album.
You're right.
From that, we then go to the talk spot, which we will nimbly dodge around, and go straight to the Swedish chef. You're a hot sauce guy.
I am something of a heat seeker to continue to harp things from other podcasts like the Timekeeper that I did earlier.
He's a timekeeper. He's a heat seeker. Don't you mess around with him. The segment here is that the Swedish chef has in front of him a whole variety of various hot sauces. And he says that they're going to be getting the Spicy Spicy, the Pepper Saucin, and the Hotsy Totsy.
He's adding it to Der Spicy Spicy Chili Juice.
So you think he's just making
chili?
The first time,
and it's beans, it's chili right. that he's adding it.
I missed chili sauce, so thank you for that. He adds a little bit of the Pepper Saucin and something from a bowl.
A pinch of the Hotsy Totsy, which is the dried red pepper.
Upon bringing up the spoon of the chili with the added hot seeds to it, the steam blows out of his ears, to which he says,
Yeesh, behold, verification, what is this? Is this your choice for more spicy, spicy, cheesy, juicy, juicy?
He then pours in the entirety of the bowl of the Hotsy Totsy.
And the rest of the
pepper sauce. And
yeah, the bottle. That's the word I'm looking for. Bottle. For our listeners out there, I mimed pouring while I tried to think of the word bottle.
You're on fire, Pete. At which point, he then dips his finger into the chili and puts it in his mouth.
Except he clearly doesn't.
No. Nor does he put the spoon in his mouth earlier.
No, but when he clearly misses the bowl and then puts it into his mouth.
For production reasons, you understand why he doesn't put a dripping chili spoon up against his foam rubber face.
Or a finger with sauce on it either. But it's
noticeable.
Yeah. Yeah.
At which point the steam explodes out of him in a violent spiral, knocking his hat off, and does he collapse backwards?
I believe so.
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting special effect. I did spend a little while trying to figure out, you know, how would have that been done. The steam out the ears seems eminently practical, that you would build a new head and that you would just have some sort of powder or something that comes out in order to create the effect. It doesn't need to be steam, it just needs to be air that can be visible on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But the way in which...
Since it was the 70s, I like to imagine someone just smoking into a tube.
But the way in which the explosive curl of air comes out and knocks his hat off, it's very interesting, and I don't have a good handle on where that secret valve was or how it worked. It's a neat, and I would go so far as to say a unique visual effect.
It's probably why he does fall backwards, so that you can't see whatever device was under...
was hidden under the hat.
Yeah.
Simple, dynamic, perfect Swedish chef.
Also, good spoon work at the very beginning.
Excellent spoon work. He doesn't knock anything off the shelf behind him, but they have continued to rearrange the furniture behind him in such a way that there's a greater possibility that when he throws the spoons behind him, it's going to collide with the physical set.
He makes it to the back of the set.
It hits the wall.
Yep, and it clatters and then clatters on the floor as well.
Doesn't knock anything off. It doesn't interact with it. It's just tantalizing that it's going to happen soon. We can but hope.
We then have another musical segment with our guest host.
And then after that, we go backstage for section 3 of our running gag.
Note for Kermit the Frog. Are you Kermit the Frog?
Unlike Fozzie, who at the end flat out denies that he's Fozzie when the joke turns around, Kermit always does admit that he is, in fact, Kermit the Frog.
Usually saying, yeah, you know, or of course I am, or something like that. Then a panel in the door that flies open.
Uh-huh.
There's three tadpole frogs. they sing a note, and Fozzie says G sharp. And then Kermit walks over to the panel, goes to shut it. It shuts on itself, landing on his hands.
Adds injury to insult.
Yeah. I did not count this as a hit.
Mm. We go to Veterinarian's Hospital. One of my favorite bits in Veterinarian's Hospital is that the introduction is always, or has started to become, and I don't believe it is in the first one, but it then becomes a running part of the structure of Veterinarian's Hospital, is that while the voiceover is doing the generic introduction of the a former orthopedic surgeon who's gone to the dogs, Piggy is playing with whatever piece of medical equipment they have brought in order to dress the set. And Oz has to figure out some business for her to do it. In this case, they have a gas mask for, one assumes, a anesthesiologist, and she's got it up to her face and is breathing in it, notices that the camera is on, gets embarrassed, and hurries away from it. This is all typical stuff. There's nothing particularly, therefore, original about it. However,
it's just fun.
It is just fun. There's something about on-set business that always makes me happy. And Piggy's reaction of sort of like, oh, crap, I'm on camera, also never fails to amuse me.
Yeah, because the camera starts on her, and then as she runs, it pans to reveal Rolf and Janice. And then Rolf asks, what's the deal with this patient?
And the behemoth is complaining that he has frog in his throat. Frog is revealed to be Kermit.
And prior to that, a stomach ache, which Dr. Bob thinks he wants a stomach ache and hits him with a mallet.
The trivia track is at pains to point out that Henson is doing Rolf and therefore can't also do Kermit. They believe that, therefore, all of Kermit's dialogue would have been a pre-recorded track that was being played on stage. And they say that you can see quite clearly that whoever is Muppeteering Kermit is not quite in sync. I think that that's only really noticeable in Kermit's final line of dialogue.
Yep.
But I regularly notice that the mouth movement of a puppet isn't necessarily in sync with what they're saying because, let's be honest,
they don't have lips, teeth, or tongues.
Right. The flapping open and down of a cardboard circle is not necessarily going to match entirely with what is actual mouth movements of the puppeteer. But
there's a reason we've talked about it in singing lip-syncing versions with humans, and right. It's never once before mentioned it with Muppets. Kermit also threatens to not ever put this Dumb Doctor show on the show again, or Dumb Doctor sketch on the show again. And then when the outro voiceover happens, Rolf and Piggy are very interested in trying to figure out where it's coming from. Janice just kind of looks up.
I'm going to say that's in character. We then go backstage, and Fozzie is extremely excited about his topper for the running gag, so much so that he's talking to Gonzo and Hilda and
Piggy
to let them in to watch that this is all going to come to a head.
Yeah, so he says, flower for Kermit the Frog, flower for Kermit the Frog. Are you Kermit the Frog? Kermit says, yes. He says, flower for you, and then dumps a bag of flour, the baking product, onto Kermit's head. Kermit's not pleased. Neither is Miss Piggy.
That's correct. When Fozzie says, that's a great punch, in a way that no one has ever said it, particularly a professional comedian, call it a punchline, you call it a button, you call it a bunch of different things, but you don't call it a punch specifically around Miss Piggy, who's going to take advantage of the situation and avenge her beflowered frog.
Because, yeah, he says, that's a good punch. She says, no, Fozzie, this is the punch, and then hits him twice.
Yeah, that's a joke. Yeah, and that was a punch.
No, Fozzie, this is the punch.
And it's also different Piggy. It's correct. Not Frank Oz Piggy.
It is, once again, it's a Richard Hunt Miss Piggy. And
we get a lot of Richard Hunt Miss Piggy in this
episode.
That's
right. And it's partially my awareness, but it's partially that I want Piggy to sound quote-unquote right in my head. And when she delivers the no, this is a punchline, it didn't feel right in my head. And I might have liked this more if Richard Hunt hadn't been doing the voice. And I feel bad saying that, because Richard Hunt is a brilliant Muppeteer, but he's not my Miss Piggy.
Yeah. And also, did they hi-ya count at all this episode?
They did.
Did
yes.
they count this? Because
according to my notes, we only get the official Haya count
during the panel.
During the panel.
Yeah.
And so the subtitles don't list this one.
Okay. That's accurate because she doesn't say Haya.
Yeah. From there, we cut to Gonzo, who is quickly joined by Candace Bergen for the third guest star song. From there, we have an audience shot and then the final guest thank yous in front of the curtain.
And then the only appearance of Statler and Waldorf at the end of
aside
the episode.
From the very beginning where they hoot and holler.
Yep, which is a far away stage shot. This is the only time you get the typical close-up of the box. And Waldorf says, I think I should see a doctor.
Yes.
Statler says, why is that? And Waldorf says, I'm beginning to like this show.
Which is at least in keeping as a button that they wouldn't have heckled a show.
That they enjoyed.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, having gone through the entire running order, let's delve into a little trivia about our guest star, Candace Bergen.
Our good friend, Candy.
Now, last week, you only had 4 questions, so in order to keep the scores potentially even, I have reduced my number of questions for you to 4 this week.
So I'm not going to have to do the terrible minute thing.
No.
Damn.
No. 3 questions in the terrible minute. It's a good week for the terrible minute.
I think you'll find... No, it's not.
Candace Bergen was born in 1946. She is the daughter of comedian and ventriloquist Edgar Bergen, the famous puppeteer who was a huge influence on Jim Henson, who appears in the Muppet movie with his puppet Charlie McCarthy, and shortly after the filming of the Muppet movie, Bergen died, and Candace Bergen arranged for Henson to speak at his funeral. In her first memoir, Bergen describes her relationship with her father's ventriloquist's dummies. In fact, the title, Knock Wood, is about how, in her early life, her relationship with her father was as much through the dummies as anything else. One of these following 3 things didn't happen. A. In her birth announcement in the LA Press, Candy is described as a rival for Edgar's affections between her and his puppet Charlie McCarthy. B. In her first appearance at age 6 on the Edgar Bergen show on television, she pretends that she's never seen any of the puppets and is being introduced for the first time to, quote, her father's second family, unquote. Or C, for her 7th birthday, she was given a large make-believe supermarket to play in, and fake currency was provided with Charlie McCarthy's face on the dollars and coins in the store.
Birth announcement, second family, birthday. I'm gonna say birth announcement is fake.
No. She did appear on the Edgar Bergen show at age 6. She was well aware of Charlie McCarthy, and McCarthy is unhappy that she's on the show at all. He says, you just remember who the real star of this show is. And she says, who? The other puppet, Mortimer Snerd? And he gets successfully pissed off. Question number 2. In a 1989 Barbara Walters interview, Walters focuses on a key moment in Bergen's past as a turning point leading to her casting in Murphy Brown, which is a largely comedic performance, but specifically points out that she's bad at singing and that she turned that to her advantage in her career. What moment does she focus on? A. Her performance on The Muppet Show. There in 1976, she only sings in 1 of the 3 musical numbers. B. Her appearance on SNL's first season, where she specifically says, in her opening monologue, that she can't sing. Or C. Her appearance in the 1979 film Starting Over, where she plays a wannabe singer who has a terrible voice.
I'm gonna say B again.
SNL.
Yes.
Candace Bergen was the first woman to host SNL. She does give a monologue that says, I'm not doing a comedic monologue, but that's not referred to in the interview. It is, in fact, her appearance in the film Starting Over, for which she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in the 1979 Oscars.
If I don't get this one, I'm getting a big fat 0 on this week.
In Muppets Take Manhattan...
Ooh, I'm in.
Director John Landis plays the agent Lenny.
John Landis. We can take that again.
Director John Landis plays Lenny the agent who delivers the immortal line, a frog in an afro, when Kermit tries to sneak into his office to promote Merry Melodies, or whatever it's called.
Manhattan
Melodies. But who plays the receptionist that warns him that a frog in an afro is about to bust into his office? A. Candace Bergen's mother, Frances Bergen. B. Candace Bergen's sister, Chloe Bergen. C. Candace Bergen's husband's first wife, Anne Marie de Rougemont.
I remember that person being relatively young, so I'm going to say her sister.
Candace Bergen doesn't have a sister. Mm. Candace Bergen's daughter with Lulie Mall was named Chloe, and it was, in fact, her mother, Frances Bergen.
Okay. My memory is wrong. I'm putting down a zero.
You might get this.
Ben, I'm not going to get this.
As always, when I have command of the trivia, we end with 6 degrees and 60 seconds, where we try to connect Candace Bergen through her top 4 best known for IMDb trivia credits to Jim Henson in under 60 seconds. Candace Bergen's top 4 on IMDb are Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock, Ben Bratt, and Michael Caine. Bride Wars with Kate Hudson and Anne Hathaway. Murphy Brown, which is a television show and doesn't count. And Gandhi, starring Ben Kingsley. Can you get from Sandy Bullock, Michael Caine, Benjamin Bratt, Kate Hudson, Anne Hathaway, Ben Kingsley, or anybody else who's in those movies to Jim Henson in 60 seconds, starting now?
Okay, so at this point, the only touchstone slash thing I've learned is Michelle Pfeiffer. So can I get Michelle Pfeiffer to any of those people? Probably. Can I go through characters? Can I say that Michael Caine was in Dark Knight with Christian Bale? Christian Bale was Batman, and therefore Batman was with Michelle Pfeiffer.
You have 24 seconds, and the answer is no.
That seems rude. I think I'm gonna stick with that as my
10
answer.
10 seconds.
Five.
Michael Caine's the right way to go.
Yeah, no, clearly it is. He's been in everything with everyone.
Three, two, one. Nearly.
Thank you. That was why I started counting down, was to try and do that thing, but then I forgot.
Upon jumping to Michael Caine, I made the connection that Michael Caine and Steve Martin were in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and Steve Martin is an obnoxious waiter in the Muppet movie.
Right. I want to backtrack for a moment.
Please.
I think you pronounced her dad's name wrong.
Edgar Bergen?
Yeah, isn't it Ingmar Bergman? Isn't her father the famed director?
Director of The Seventh Seal?
Yeah, isn't that her dad?
No.
Oh, right. They have different names. That's all I've been able to think of since I learned his name was Edgar Bergen.
Well, that might explain why you did so bad on the trivia.
I kept waiting for a question about Seventh Seal, and it kept not coming up.
All right, here we go. Here's my question about The Seventh Seal.
Okay.
In Last Action Hero, Arnold Schwarzenegger...
Directed by famed murderer John Landis.
Arnold Schwarzenegger parodies The Seventh Seal, and upon receiving the golden ticket, Death from The Seventh Seal steps out of the screen and stalks the young protagonist with the ticket throughout the film. Who plays him?
The young boy?
No, Death.
I have no idea. I've never seen it.
I'm 90%... Yeah, look it up, because I'm going to get this wrong, and none of this is going to make the episode, but...
Because I keep referring to famed murderer Jonathan Landis?
No. because when I started this bonus trivia question, I knew already that I was going to cut all of it. I think it's Ian McKellen.
Also, I was wrong. It's directed by John McTiernan.
Famous wiretapper, John McTiernan.
It is Ian McKellen.
Oh, yeah. So, there's your trivia question. You still got it wrong.
0 out of 5. I'll change this.
Yes. And while the first chapter of Knock Knock was kind of a mini biography of Edgar, and she goes into her Nordic past in order to give us context for him. I am sorry to say that you are correct. There is a difference between Bergen and Bergman. Mm-hmm. And Bergman is the unexpected virtue of ignorance. So, yeah, Candy Bergen is in three musical numbers in this episode and sings in only one of them.
I did notice that.
Silent in the other two. So much so that I was wondering, does she not have the ability to sing? So when she eventually sang in the third segment and was fine,
just fine. There's a reason why she only has maybe two lines by herself and the rest is all buried in the chorus of other Muppets.
But not so bad that I would not.
I wonder if she's like me, who knows they have a fine voice, but they don't like singing. They don't like having other people hear their voice, that she's just not comfortable doing it.
And there's I could find nothing that gave me any indication as to why the choices were made. But it's a variety show that has musical acts. She's in three of them. Instead of doing the thing that they did with other guests where they just sort of had them introduce a musical number and leaned into more sketches, they have her be the sketch comedic presence in the musical numbers. Do we want to do this in order instead of coming up with a taxonomy of Candace Bergen in the episode?
So, that makes sense.
The first appearance is the
Put Another Log on the Fire song with the long-legged man.
Put another log on the fire. Cook me up some bacon and some beans. And go out to the car and change the tire.
His legs are so long.
His legs are so long.
And they're tapping, so they're practical. Or something about them is, there's no knees, they're just long. They're just long legs. I don't like it.
So much so that according to the trivia track, there are people who believed that that was a human Muppet with somebody in the costume. But they're longer than that, and they're skinnier than that. So, yeah, no. Jim Henson is in that chair, and he's controlling the hand strumming the ukulele, the mouth of the singing puppet, and then has rods in order to move the legs a little bit when he's not doing all the other things.
Yeah.
The premise of the sketch... Well, the name of the song is Put Another Log on the Fire. However, that's not the full title of the song.
Oh, I can imagine. It's probably worse.
The full title of the song is Put Another Log on the Fire, open parentheses, The Male Chauvinist National Anthem, close parentheses.
So it knew what it was.
As written by Shel Silverstein.
Wow. Okay, so it was written to be satirical.
It was written to be satirical. It was originally performed by Waylon Jennings and a trio of other people under the group name of The Outlaws, and released in 1974. So this was a comic song from the outset, and set in a country idiom very deliberately in order to poke fun at the kind of person that would blindly sing this song and not realize how offensive it was.
Yeah.
Which is the premise of the sketch.
Yeah, that the first verse is Candace comically trying to keep up with all of his demands of, like, go change the tire, put another pot of tea on, and she's rushing around trying to do all these things.
While he sits with his long legs extending from the easy chair to the fire.
Those legs are so gross. And then the second verse, she starts to get mad and she sits down and just kind of stares at him angrily. And then the second chorus, she changes into a feminist icon shirt and then
knocks all the stuff off the lintel,
breaks his fishing pole, throws it in the fire,
dumps his food on the floor, and then finally grabs a shotgun off the wall, thinks about shooting it at him,
points it at him. And then instead turns it at the door and shoots the door off the hinges and walks out.
Leaving him confused and bemused.
And she puts a bucket on his head.
Yes, yes. Which is the only thing that covers up his McNulty-esque, what did I do? Expression at the very end.
Yeah, I liked this a lot. I thought this was a lot of fun.
But it is strange that she's silent throughout. She's doing a lot of face acting, reacting to the lyrics in the second one, which include lyrics where it's clear that he is interested in her little sister.
And ain't I always nice to your kid sister? Don't I take her driving every night?
Yeah, it may be even referred to in the song as kid sister.
Very much so.
So, gross?
Yeah, gross on lots of levels and is pretty much the turning point of where she goes from angrily knitting / sewing to...
I'm going to get revenge.
I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
Funny and gives her stuff to do, but it is strange that... she's not the center of the piece in a way in which we've expected musical numbers to center around the guest.
See, I disagree, because he is still on the chair. Mm. He does not move. His weird, gross leg taps, and he plays the guitar, and then eventually some other Muppets pop up in a window and sing the chorus with
him. The Gogolala Jug Band is adding the chorus after the first verse.
But otherwise, there's no motion in this episode other than her.
Okay.
So I would say that she is the only action of this segment.
You find her silence to not be detrimental. You think she's doing a lot in this
sketch. Yes, I think she's, I mean, along with the lyrics, I think she's doing the work of this sketch.
Okay. Her second major appearance is the panel discussion. The question on the floor that Kermit poses is, does travel broaden the mind? And she is introduced fourth out of the four panelists after Mildred, who we get a last name for.
We do. Mildred Hochstadter, MABADANDUMB.
Solid joke. Miss Piggy, who is referred to as Noted Shantuzi and Black Belt. And the way in which Kermit denigrates her singing by mispronouncing the French chanteuse, I assumed tickled your fancy as an anti-Frenchie.
Sure did. Very much enjoyed the fact that Kermit also disrespects that culture.
Sam the Eagle is introduced as their resident grouch, which he immediately performs. And Candace is playing a role as Miss Clara Cartwell, who is the noted author of
the best-selling book, Europe on $5,000 a Day.
Oh, no, no, no. It's called Europe on $50 a Day. The book itself, however, costs $5,000.
Yeah, it's a strong start to this panel. The fact that everyone gets an introduction, there's good jokes in every introduction is good.
Except for the fact that Mildred, Piggy, and Sam are all Frank Oz characters, and Frank can only play one of them. He plays Sam, which is good, because his primary interactions in the sketch are with Candace, and he is a great live improviser puppeteer. Like, he responds to the moment, which we will get back to. Pete is nodding violently in anticipation of what's bound to be a moment.
Yeah.
But the fact that we have Richard Hunt as Piggy and Mildred as...
let me look it up.
I assume Jerry Nelson means that half the panel rings false to my ears. They're just not on model.
Dave Goals.
Interesting. However, as the writer of Europe on $50 a Day, and now the newly minted author on Nowhere on Nothing a Day, which is a good throwaway gag that does not get the attention it deserves, they talk about whether or not travel is broadening the mind. The other problem with the other non-Candace half of the program is it's just fat jokes the whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah, because they take broadened to mean wide, because Mildred then says that Piggy hasn't traveled at all, and she's broader than any of us. It is rough. Sam then comments that he's been to Persia, and he bought a rug there, which Candace says, or misinterprets, or maybe is being
willfully setting up a joke. I think she is enjoying, her character is enjoying being the life of the party, and so she does this just so that she can say a joke and then laugh at her own joke. Because she says that she's glad he's not wearing it because she prefers a bald eagle.
And she hits him joyously.
Yes.
I counted this as a hit. Because she
slaps him on the shoulder.
No, she does the straight up punch.
Oh, okay. She punches him in the shoulder.
She punches his arm. So I counted this as a hit.
And she is, we've mentioned a number of people who are in love with their own bad humor in this episode. Candace's character of Clara Cartwell is in that category.
Yeah.
The one good joke that comes out of the other half of the side is the idea that she thought Marcello Mastroianni was a kind of soup. And the main runner in this, besides the terrible fat-shaming jokes, is that Sam doesn't get any of the jokes. No matter what joke is said, Sam is clueless. He's very keen to correct Clara that, no, 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 that's not that kind of rug. And he's very keen here to say,
now wait, I have been to restaurants where I've ordered Marcello Mastroianni and I've gotten it.
Really, what did you get?
A swarthy, good-looking man sitting in a bowl.
But he's keen very quickly to point out he always sends him back.
And Candace almost breaks when he says this.
We'll talk about her final musical number and her performance in it, but this is the place where I most found her at home and at play with the Muppets.
Yeah.
When we get to the second song, Look at That Face, she's goofy, but mostly just sort of sitting still, and the song happens around her. Here, I feel like, is her perfect integration in the show.
Yeah. I agree. She's having a ton of fun, and everyone else is well.
Sam isn't.
Neither is Piggy. Mildred then makes another crack at Piggy's weight.
Uh-huh. Well, also about her general appearance, because Kermit says, our special guest is here, let's put our best face forward. Not our best foot forward, which I believe is the actual expression, but let's put our best face forward. Seems to be just a setup for Mildred to be cruel.
Then whose face is Porker here going to borrow?
Porker could mean fat, could mean pig. Either way, it's saying she's ugly.
Either way, Piggy has stated in many previous episodes she doesn't like pig references.
And started this episode by saying that.
Yep. Piggy then hits Mildred 3 times.
Uh-huh.
2 hits and a kick. And then the panel starts to wrap up and Sam and Clara are going to go out on a date.
And Kermit ends the sketch by saying, join us next week when our topic will be air pollution, a modern myth, ? At which point the stage is suffused with gray smoke.
Which is another joke that they've already done with the Wayne and Wanda sketch.
But it's also not a segue out of what's going on. That with all the disillusion of the panel, you could have done something about chaos in civil discourse, or you could have done something about
a coup d'etat over a government or something like that.
Relationships between species. There are plenty of places you could have gone with this, but instead they just did something non-connected in order to have it go to smoke and then fade to black.
Yep. Yeah, maybe they did the smoke simply so because it was going to cut to commercial after that, because after this is the Rolf song.
Correct.
So they could have done that.
As an easy transition from the smoke to the fade.
Yeah, but I agree, the panel sketches are strongest when they have a good outro joke.
But unfortunately, I think we're 50-50. I think out of the 4 panels now, we've had 2 good segue jokes and 2 completely random buttons. So perhaps I'm on the wrong side of history of demanding that that is the way in which they end. Just because the first 2 did end that way doesn't mean that it is actually the more prevalent of the options.
Mm-hmm. The next time we see Candace is in the talk spot, which I titled Candid Candace.
Because, as Kermit mentions in the introduction, in addition to being an actress, she is also a writer and a photographer, which is true. She was a writer and a photo journalist contributor to Life magazine, New York magazine, Esquire, Vogue, and Cosmo.
And so she's taking pictures of Kermit. She wants to take candid shots of him, and every time she says that he's not being candid, he gets more and more posy.
Which is an excellent bit. It brings us back to the Joel Grey, Kermit has legs and is able to manipulate them bit. You didn't have a problem with Kermit's legs, did
you? Nope, these are fine normal legs.
Fine normal legs. You're in favor of frog legs.
Yes, as long as we're not eating them, because only gross cultures eat frog legs.
But in general, Kermit escalating the less and less natural bits of the photograph are an enjoyable piece of puppeteering on Henson's part.
And gets our second straight reference to a Barrymore as well.
Correct.
Because he eventually talks about how good his profile is and how it's been compared to Barrymore. And then Sweetums crashes the stage
to say,
although my profile has been compared to Barrymore.
Ethel Barrymore.
Which is some real hard cheese on Ethel Barrymore. She's taken a lot of stick in this show.
Yeah.
But I assume you enjoy Sweetums crashing the stage.
Again, the note on my on my page is all capitals, Sweetums! Exclamation point.
Sweetums asks if that's a good camera, and Candace talks a little bit about its virtues.
And its lens capabilities.
Correct. She spends more time detailing how good the lens is for, in an interesting twist, Sweetums removes the telephoto lens, throws it away, and eats the camera, at which point he says, I don't know, I've tasted better. He didn't eat the thing that Candace was going on and on about.
He ate the camera.
That's right.
And Candace is miffed by this, and Kermit says, hey, it's probably a good thing he ate that, because last week he ate the guest.
It ends on a trackable tag.
Cute. It's a cute show, said by Candace. So we've got two cute cutes this episode.
I was not surprised to see it from Kermit. I was genuinely surprised to see that, again, that line of dialogue was handed to a guest. Then, as I mentioned, our third song.
Look at that face.
The premise of this being that Candace is an artist's model. There are a couple of lines of dialogue. I find that I look at your face.
Look at those eyes, as wise and as deep as the sea.
In which she crosses and bugs them, and then when they talk about the beauty of her nose, she flares and twitches it. This is nice that it gives her something to do that's overtly comic, because later all she's able to do is the fact that she's holding grapes as her artist model persona, and she mimes spitting out the seeds while never actually spitting anything.
No, she does.
I disagree.
She eats two of the grapes. That is the only other thing she does in this episode. Yep. You're right. But the second grape, she pulls it off the vine, and I believe she spits out the little nub of the stem that comes off when you pull the grape off the vine.
She blows her lips as if she's spitting it out, but nothing ever comes out.
See, I saw that as an ad lib that she did because she got that in there.
Got the piece of stem.
I don't want this in there.
Huh. Because
so, again, we have different reads on that.
She does it frequently enough. Because she continues to do it throughout, including one in close-up.
Oh, so that's the one time I noticed her doing it, and that's the time I thought I saw something come out.
Well, maybe, but lots of other times she continues to do it, and it's clearly just a mimed spit.
Okay.
And so I think she was prohibited from actually spitting for whatever reason, whatever grossness we don't actually want you spitting. Or maybe she was given the, this would be funny, and said, no, that's beneath me to actually spit on television. It could have been her. It could have been them. I have zero information. All I knew is that because it was faked, it didn't read as funny to me.
I wrote it down as a potential moment.
Fascinating. We are really responding differently to this episode.
Yeah.
I don't believe we'll be able to figure out why. But the main joke in this is that because Piggy, Gonzo, Bunsen, the green and blue Frackles, and Mildred are all in this art class, which is being led by a character called Andre the Artist, who is leading the song and singing Look at That Face, a song by Anthony Newley, who some people will know as the co-writer of the songs in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I'm sorry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And the puppet that sings his song is played by Peter Friedman, who also was the lead mop in Ragmop.
Okay.
Who was not on very many, many episodes of The Muppet Show. This is it for Peter Friedman.
Okay. As you started getting to, so every one of those student Muppets or other artist Muppets has their own interpretation of Candace, usually them as the star holding the grapes.
Right.
And they're all different and fun to look at. They all get their shot on camera.
Yep. But basically, they're looking at her and they're painting them themselves.
Bunsen is painting a Vitruvian Man-esque style.
Yeah, it's kind of a combination between Vitruvian Man and Blueprints.
Yeah, I wrote both of those. Look at me, Mr. doesn't know anything about art, getting both of those references.
The only exception to this is that the button on the sketch is that we see Animal is also in the class, and instead of painting her, He is painting a Pollock-esque splatter painting of animal-esque colors.
Mm-hmm.
At which point Andre the artist says, "Animal, I told you to paint her."
He thanks him and then runs to her and then just starts painting blue on all over Candace's face and arms.
It is very hard to read Candace's expression. I was trying to think what it must feel like to have a puppet's hand controlled by a wire bring a brush full of paint up to your face, whether that would be
mere inches from your eye at yeah, one point.
Whether that would be too much pressure in order to get it to work, a strange absence of real contact. I mean, there's definitely paint on her face, so it works, but mm-hmm. there was a kind of
embracing for this.
Yes. Negative anticipation in her eyes.
Yeah. We get one take at this, gentlemen. I'm not giving you a second.
Or, we did this once before and it went badly.
Yeah.
This one better go good.
Yep. The next time we see her is in the last song,
mm-hmm.
where Gonzo is being grumpy Gonzo.
Gonzo walks on stage in a sort of misty set, saying, "There's no one here beside me." It turns out that his dialogue is the opening lyrics to a song, "Friends," by Mark Klingman and William Lyndhurst, a song that was apparently Bette Midler's theme song for a number of years. Not a super catchy song, yeah. She must have liked it. Candace then comes on and says, "I'm here, Gonzo," and sort of sing-talks the second verse, or second stanza, saying that you've got to have friends.
And then even more Muppets come on mm-hmm. screen to join, and then they all sing to cheer up Gonzo.
They clutch in on a group. We've got the Blue Frackle, Hilda, Mildred, Gonzo, Rolf, and Fozzie all coming together, and eventually Kermit and Scooter join them for the final verse, coming in front. And Candace is doing a very strange thing here.
She keeps looking up and almost rolling her eyes.
Yeah. She's doing a very goofy facial expression, almost like she's mocking the lyrics. Like, I've heard these lyrics so many times before. But then she'll periodically look particularly at Fozzie and just start laughing for real. So she's doing it, but she's mocking it, but she's in the real spirit of it, but she's not in it.
I have a theory that came up while recording this episode.
I'd love a theory because I could not interpret what was going on in this.
So we've long discussed the lip-syncing aspects.
Yes.
I think she's reacting to her performance of her not singing well. And she's going, "Oh, I sound so bad right there." Or something along those lines of, "I wish I didn't have to do this for that reason." But then, yeah, she immediately then gets back into the moment and is like, "Oh, I'm having fun with Muppets."
She is having fun. She, like, every time she's reacting to the Muppets, she's in it. But you're right. When she's doing the la 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 la's, that's when she's sort of doing the eye-rolling, condescending things. The emotional heart of the song is the thing that she can't maintain the facade for. Very bizarre.
Yeah. I have no proof, and we are only speculating.
Yeah.
I feel confident in my read that she is not enjoying her performance on the audio.
Here's my question. This was the best take?
Yeah.
They couldn't find a thing where she was able to do it from start to finish without giving up on her performance? That the directors and producers looked at that and said, "Yes, we want authenticity. We want you to be authentically conflicted about this, and that's the best way to sell you to the CBS public."
Maybe those were the takes where
everything else worked.
Or that they decided, A, this will only air once. Mm. No one's going to be able to pause this and watch this multiple times. So no one will notice she rolls her eyes. But they will notice her laughing with Fozzie and having a grand old time all those other times. That they liked those moments more than they were like, mm.
Or maybe it didn't read that way to them. Maybe it was, she's having a good time and it didn't come across as sarcastic. It came across as goofy and fun.
Because she never does roll her eyes. She just looks up
and out. Yeah, but she is sort of, she's looking in an unfocused way.
Yeah, it's odd, for sure.
She then, after the song comes to its conclusion, comes out for the farewell, and oh boy, Fozzie is excited that Kermit is letting him wrap up the show.
Candace tells Fozzie that Kermit might be a little upset with him because of all the gags, but Fozzie says, no, Kermit loves the running gags.
At which point, you hear Kermit's voice off screen saying, pie for Fozzie the Bear, pie for Fozzie the Bear. Are you Fozzie the Bear, he says when he walks on camera, and Fozzie freezes and says, no.
And Kermit says, good, I got a pie for you anyway.
At which point, he hits Fozzie in the face with it, pulls it away, and there's a little bit of foam around Fozzie's nose and eyes, but not very much. So he goes back in for a second swap, at which point a huge chunk of foam flies off from the impact, and Candace Bergen has stepped back 3 or 4 feet for this, and yet the large chunk of foam flies back and lands on her arm.
Right in the crook of her elbow. And Fozzie screams.
Look what you did! Look what you did!
And then just yells at Kermit while the credits start rolling. They start the song late.
Mm.
They don't start the song until the credits are rolling. Usually the song starts
in order to hear the audio of Fozzie saying, you hit the lady, look what you did.
Yeah, and even then, Frank just goes off for a while. And they're just like, all right, well, we'll just start this later.
The other Muppets come on in and crowd around, but you can't hold him back. He's so excited about this real-life accident that happened. They're running with it.
Yep.
And he is chastising Kermit.
And Candace is just helpless. Laughing.
Like that raw, I'm not making any noise, I'm laughing so hard laughter.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And yeah, credits roll, and that's the episode.
Well, we've talked a lot about hits,
mm-hmm.
So I think we should probably start with how many hits total, and how did this add to our total?
So, question.
Yeah.
Does getting hit with a pie count as a hit?
I mean, it has to in this case.
In that case, I tallied 9 hits, not counting the 12 hits from the dance, so that's 21, and then 2 pies makes 23 hits this episode. Other than that, no explosions, because popping balloons don't count as explosions unless they explode. And no Muppet human kissing. As far as music goes, there was 11 minutes and 40 seconds of music out of this 26-minute and 25-second episode for 44.13%, which makes it the second highest amount of music for an episode where the guest does not like to sing. Which I think episode 7 was the highest, which would be... Oh, Paul Williams.
Yeah.
That makes sense that that's the most music.
Uh-huh. Though.
But yeah, someone who doesn't like to sing has the second highest number of music so far.
We talked about it with Paul Williams that we felt that the episode was long because they had a singer as the guest and because the songs that they chose tended to stay there in order to emphasize the song. Here, I think what happened is because the sketches needed to breathe, we got longer portions of the song in order to allow Candace to have things to do.
Yeah. So, Ben.
So, Pete.
You and I had different feelings on this episode.
Yeah.
About how good Candace was. Where do you think I fell on ranking Candace Bergen?
Considering that you really liked the first song, that she was great in the panel discussion, the only real hitch is in one of her 2 songs, she interacts with the Muppets hardly at all. And in her last appearance, the way in which she interacts with the Muppet is weirdly querulous, that she's all over the map. I don't know how to rate all of those together. I suspect, therefore, in the lower half, but I can't be certain.
So in the 12 to 24 range?
Yeah. 16?
No. We had a displacement.
Oh, okay.
Rita Moreno's now number 4. Candy's number 3.
Wow.
I really liked Candy in this episode.
Yeah. And I understand why. I thought that the moments where she clicked were fantastic. But I found that there were, as I started off of this episode, I found this episode incredibly uneven.
All right. Yeah, It was my natural reaction to say three because I enjoyed it so much. I could see this slipping, but the parts that hit hard with me hit hard.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed them. So that's why I rated it so high.
Rating guests is your thing. So I literally can't quibble with it. Let's talk about our five favorite moments of the episode. You said that you were spoiled for choice as the different possibilities. So why don't you start us off with one of your five favorite tiny bits of performance or line reading or special effects or things that you want to draw attention to or highlight so that we end the show talking about some of the things that made us stop and think and smile.
I'm going to start with in the dance.
Mm.
George's laugh when he pops the balloon. He's so pleased with himself. And I can't recall that laugh now, but both times I watched it, it did make me laugh out loud. It's so wild and it goes on for so long comparative to what the dance is supposed to be, quick segments.
That's right.
And his laughter goes on for longer than it should, and they let it. I found it very enjoyable.
There were only four punchlines in At the Dance.
Usually there's five.
And so I think they took the opportunity for that to breathe as the final segment, for Mildred's reaction to it, for George's reaction to his glee at his dumb joke, all to sit there with the audience instead of rushing to a fifth joke.
Yeah. So that's my first moment. What's your moment?
One of the things that I highlighted that I wanted to bring up was the design of the question himself.
Hmm.
It can barely be called a Muppet, perhaps, but they went so far as to make sure that he has pink hands to match the pink balloon. There's something about the giant question mark on the balloon. If I were at a fun fair and they had a pop the balloon contest and all of them looked like the question, I would spend so much money just to hang out at that booth. There's something really bizarre about the balloon head with a question mark on it. The fact that it pops and there's nothing underneath, and so the answer to the question is nothing? I loved the design of that Muppet. I'm kind of disappointed that this is the only time I've ever seen it. It's never come back to my knowledge. I wish that the legacy of the question Muppet echoed throughout its 45-year history, because I just think it's really fun and funny looking. Or maybe I just like the bizarre concept of a question mark popping and revealing nothing at all.
Maybe George just really doesn't like questions. For my next moment, I'm going to re-bring up something that we did touch on once already, which is in the panel, Candace almost breaking at Sam saying the swarthy good-looking man sitting in a bowl. You can see on her face she's trying not to, and then a moment later she does laugh at whatever Frank says next.
Mm.
But that moment where she's like, no, don't laugh.
Keep it together. Yeah. Keep it in character.
Is great for me. I very, very much enjoyed that.
For my fourth moment, I want to highlight a throwaway joke in the Look at That Face sketch. When Andre the artist is going around and looking at all the paintings, he says about Mildred's painting, I believe, that it is inspired.
Inspired, but by what?
Which is a solid burn. And in my opinion, the best joke of the whole sketch. And so I just wanted to underline that that throwaway line didn't get the laughter perhaps that it deserved. And I hope that if people listen to this before that they watch it, that they notice it, or if they ever go back and rewatch it, that they treasure the least professional reaction a painting teacher could have with his class.
For my final moment, I'm going to choose the final moment from the episode.
Yeah.
And bring up Fozzie screaming, look what you did.
I mean, that moment plus Rolf doing it's not where you start, it's where you end, are the twin poles of hilarity. The beginning of the second act and the end of the second act are absolutely scream out loud with laughter moments. I understand why anybody would have said, this is a great guest and a great episode, because of those two pieces of the episode alone. I talk all the time about the ending is the most important thing, because what you leave an episode with colors your opinion of everything else. Of course you'd leave that moment in. It is one of the best moments of The Muppet Show.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you mentioned earlier Frank Oz being a wonderful improviser. You've got the Sam the Eagle in the panel sketch breaking Candace. You've got this moment of Fozzie screaming. You've got the UK spot like you just mentioned. Everything is great.
And who can argue with that? Who would dare say with that short list of three that they'd want to mount in a defense as to why this episode should be less well-regarded?
Mm.
Certainly not this guy.
Three moments? Ranks three on the list. This episode of The Henson Perspective was researched, performed, and edited by Ben Russell and Pete Russell. Sound design such as it is, also by the two of us.
Our logo is based on designs by Liana Emling. Thank you, Liana. The theme song is from archival Henson Associates clips of Silver and Cone's Yes, We Have No Bananas, under what we hope is transformative fair use, much as the Hensons did when they first broadcast to Salmon Friends.
You can find us at farstperspective.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @farstnamebasis. This podcast, as conceived of by Nathan Emily and Ben Russell, is an intellectual exploration of the lasting power of comedic phenomena.
There are things, dates, facts, names, hot sauces, or data of any kind that you feel is incorrect. Please contact us via the website and we will post it to our errata page on farstperspective.com as soon as possible.
Again, our discussion is purely in the name of academic interest and contributing to the common conversation. I'm Pete, my co-host is Ben.
Jim, Ethel.
And we'll see you next time when we discuss production episode 13, guest starring Bruce Forsyth. Yay!